He was warm. He'd been well fed. He should be lost in dreamless slumber, as it seemed his companions were. Mattis, gently snoring, Carolus motionless and silent. But Alexis's mind was restless, swirling with questions to which there were no answers. He felt like getting up and hurling something out into the night. What did that make him? An angry child, thwarted in some selfish desire. A fool who'd lost the capacity to find his own answers. He rolled over for the 100th time, covering his eyes with his forearm. The moonlight was dim through the woven lattice of the roof. Somewhere out there, an owl hooted, as if to remind him that it was night-time, and all sensible human folk were asleep. Then Carolus spoke softly, startling him. "Talk to her, you fool." "What?" "You're worried about her, Stasia. You wonder where she will go, what she will do now this part of the story is over. That's muddling up your thoughts. So talk to her. Ask her." She had no choice but to come with us, to save her friend, to save herself. Now we're here. We found Marcus, and these folk will see us safely back down the mountain. So we don't need her to find the way anymore. She's free to go. Silence. "They'll escort her and Lucas home when the place is rid of the ruler's men, and they can pick up their lives again." "Mm-hmm. Didn't you say not long ago that it's Stasia's decision? Sounds as if you're making the decision for her." Mattis stirred. "Storyteller," he mumbled. "You really think we don't need one in the team?" "Vital role," said Carolus. "If you're reluctant to ask her, Alex, then I will. And if she says no to an escort home, then you may need to consider why she might not want to go back to the settlement." "Do what the royal advisor would do," added Mattis, struggling up to a sitting position. "Put all the facts in front of her and give her time to think it over. Answer her questions honestly." "The royal advisor does not always answer questions honestly, even when he isn't plotting the overthrow of his ruler," Alexis said. "He answers them cautiously." They were both staring at him in the semi-dark. It was curiously unsettling. He wondered for a moment whether the mission had turned him crazy. "Be honest, Alex. These are your trusted friends." "Stasia is one of us," Mattis said. "Part of our team. A wayfinder, yes, but so much more. What she does, none of the rest of us can do. But you want to protect her, to keep her safe from harm. But would she want that? So far, she's done a pretty good job of protecting herself, and us on occasion. You don't want her wielding a weapon, doing harm to folk when it's so alien to her nature. We feel the same. And we'd try to stop that from happening again. But Stasia may be prepared to risk it in order to help the team, in order to achieve the greater goal." Carolus paused. "Could be you're letting your personal feelings get in the way, Alex. That's not like you." Now he sounded mildly amused. The temptation to throw something was becoming harder to resist. "She could have been killed today. Did you happen not to notice Rihard with his knife to her throat?" Mattis sighed. "How often do you think I imagine Leia in trouble? Leia under threat? Leia scared or trapped or hurt? But do I try to stop her from playing a part in our work because of that? Do I ask her to set that work aside and wait on her own at home while I put myself at risk for the same reason? Of course not. Why? Because she's doing a job none of the rest of us can do. A job she's good at. She's playing her part, as all of us are. Do I worry about her? Do I often wish I could protect her, keep her safe? Of course I do. She's my wife, and I love her. It's only natural to feel that way. But I don't act on it. We're all part of this, Alex. We trust one another. We work as a team. Stasia belongs to our team. At least give her the chance to say yes or no to going on with us. She's a grown woman, not a fragile child, Alex. I should point out that she got herself out of Rihard's clutches pretty efficiently, taking advantage of a moment's opportunity, and made herself remarkably useful in that fight, considering she has no combat training at all. I could remedy that. Indeed, if we take up the plan I suggested, I should do so. That might help allay your fears. Carolus sounded perfectly calm. Alexis began to wonder if the two of them had planned this assault on his feelings. If that was what this was, he did feel attacked. Maybe you should lead the team from now on, Carolus, he said with some bitterness. Bollocks, you're the leader. You were from the first, and you will be to the end. We trust you, Alex. We hope you trust us enough to listen, even when what we say is unpalatable to you. Just talk to Stasia, will you? Allow her the freedom to make her own choices. You can't deny that she's earned it. 47. Stasia. She woke early after a night of blissful, dreamless sleep. Mother Rowan was already up, tending to the fledgling fire. It was light outside, not the first light of dawn, but the warmer glow of a fine day in the making and a bright summer to come. Stasia rose from the bed, flip edged over into the warm space she had left. May I help? Stasia asked. Have a wash first. Get dressed. Take what time you need. I'll brew some tea. The wise woman added more wood to the fire, then rose to her feet. Did you sleep well, my dear? The best sleep I've had in a long time, thank you. It's so peaceful here. Sometime later, they were by the pool in the inner cavern, side by side. The bats had settled to sleep long since, though an occasional whisper of movement passed through the shadowy mass of them. Enough light was entering to show Stasia her own reflection, and she was shocked by how gaunt she looked, how worn out. This was surely a far older, sadder person than the Stasia of Hartwood. Yet here she was, with a wise friend, in the safest of places and among peaceable folk. The forest was all around her. Her companions of the journey were here too, all but one. Why was that face in the water so weary, so full of doubt? I'm not sure I'm ready for this, she admitted. To seek wisdom in the fire or the water, a person needed to clear their mind, to open it to possibilities, to find the right question. A person needed to be calm and peaceful. What is your usual practice, Stasia? Mother Rowan asked. We are within the earth, with the water before us, this perhaps to represent fire. She fished a twig from her pocket and laid it by the pool. One end was charred, perhaps from the hearth fire. Stasia reached into her own pocket and withdrew a feather that had lain in her path as she approached the hermit. Soft, grey, with a touch of vivid blue, a thing of wonder and beauty. She placed it gently alongside the twig. There's a verse my grandmother taught me. After I slow my breathing, I say that one line at a time. Good. Shall we begin? Take my hand, if you will. It is for you to ask the question when you are ready. The two breathed together, a gradual slowing. In her mind, Stasia thanked each of the elements in turn for the blessing it bestowed. Then, when it felt like time, she spoke the familiar words. The oak's deep roots hold fast to the earth. I, too, will be strong. Standing up to an attacker, keeping on going, even when she was worn out and sad, ending the pain of a small creature beyond saving, challenging the ruler. The graceful willow moves with the wind. I, too, will dance. Not yet, but soon. perhaps in this realm, if not her own. The lost boy was found. Despite the challenge ahead, this was a time of joy. The mighty ash towers to the heavens. I too will stretch high. To climb a rock face, to reach out a hand to the ruler's senior advisor when he lost his way, perhaps in time to become a wise woman. The sun gleams on the still pool. I too will hold the light. She had held the lantern for Mother Rowan. She had seen the wonder of the caves, but there was a greater light to hold, the light within. Not only to keep it burning, but to share it. Mother Rowan might teach her about that if she chose to stay. She asked the question in a murmur. I seek guidance for the pathway forward. Choices lie ahead for me. Which is best, wisest, most true? They waited, hand in hand. From beyond the cavern came the morning voices of birds, a rising chorus, a flutter of wings closer at hand, and Flip landed on Stasia's shoulder, a tiny owl. It was not long before their reflections on the water broke up and reformed as something new. A scene of fields and trees and modest houses, a village hall, a bakery. And there was Lucas, older but unmistakable, striding across the square. Two curly-haired children were running around him, playing chase. Lucas looked out of the water and raised a hand in greeting. His smile was radiant. He was a picture of contentment. Beside him walked an old and somewhat familiar dog. The vision faded, and slowly, slowly, another formed in the water. Stasia's breath caught. The scene was the ruler's council chamber, and it made her gut churn, almost jolting her out of the trance. Mother Rowan squeezed her hand gently, and she gained control of her breathing once more. People at the long table. Familiar people. Marcus, with Alexis by his side. And more folk, their manner and dress, telling her this was a council of elders or leaders, people of power. Alex was talking, intense, passionate, troubled, gesturing. Mattis stood behind him on watchful guard. No sign of Carolus. A man stood up and interrupted Alex, a man whose expression chilled her heart. Alex's jaw tightened. His hands became white-knuckled fists. He sprang to his feet, eyes furious, and the image faded away. What sort of answer was that? Mother Rowan squeezed her hand again, as if to say, wait. And now a different image appeared. Great trees above, a forest clearing below. Two women sat there among moss-cloaked stones while a little dog busied herself investigating something in the undergrowth. Through the high canopy, sunlight filtered down on the women. One was of middle years, her chestnut hair threaded with grey. The other was a wizened ancient, but Stasia knew her as Mother Rowan. The two looked relaxed, content. They were deep in conversation. Each wore the robe of a wise woman. Each bore around her neck an amber talisman. One was a swallow in flight. The other was an owl. Stasia reached up now to touch her own amber owl and felt the brush of Flip's feathers against her cheek. The image faded and was gone. Only the water and the two women reflected there. One getting on in years, the other young. For a moment, they looked like two of a kind. Stasia found herself unable to move. Mother Rowan released her hand, then put an arm around her shoulders and ushered her back to the other room and to the table. Sit, my dear. Take some time. It was no help at all. She couldn't say that. There was always something to be learned from visions, but right now, she couldn't think what it might be. Not long ago, She had been filled with delight that the wise woman would consider taking her on as a sort of apprentice, deeply happy that she might make the hermit her home. But shouldn't the vision have shown her following the other pathways? There had been nothing of her in them. Unless the Lucas of the future had indeed turned that joyful smile on her, unless the Alex of the future had been looking in her direction for reassurance, she did not think she could believe in either of those. Herself as a village wife, a mother of children, with Lucas's disapproving parents part of her everyday existence, and scarcely a moment of the day free to be alone under the trees. Herself seated at a council table with the leaders of the Northlands and beyond, where someone like her would surely never be taken seriously, even if she could manage to get her words out. She had loved the image of herself with the wise woman, quiet under the trees, working together. It was the kind of life she had always longed for. Had something changed in her that it no longer felt like enough? Mother Rowan set a fresh cup of tea in front of her, along with a small platter of cheese and dried fruit. "Remember," she said, "these visions do not show you what will be, only what might be. Perhaps the answer lies elsewhere entirely. Or perhaps the possibilities are more flexible than you believe. Maybe they can be stretched to fit." She sat down opposite Stasia, lifting her own cup to take a sip. "This morning, before the gathering, you might go to visit your friend in the healer's house. I think he would welcome that. And you might have a word with Master Alexis in private. Ask him about his plans." "The possibilities may stretch. Are you saying there might be a place for me in more than one of these? How could that be?" "The future is yours to make, Stasia. Don't rush to a decision. There is time." Mother Rowan's voice was gentle. "I find it helps to turn your dilemma into a story. Think on that. I should make it clear that wherever your choices take you, you will always be welcome here. Have no fear that you will ever be barred from this realm. You belong here, just as I did. But perhaps you also have a place in the human world and work to do there." 48. Lucas. At last he was free from pain. At last he could stop pretending all was well, ignoring the deep aching, forcing his body to keep going even when he could hardly bear it. Now he could move, breathe, rest. But for all that, he was not comfortable in this place with its strange folk and the feeling that magic, if not right before his eyes, was all around him. He'd felt it in the touch of the quiet man who'd applied a pungent-smelling poultice to his side, while Lucas lay very still on the bed. He'd tasted it in the draught the healers had given him, which was an unlikely shade of green. To be fair, it had tasted far better than it looked. After that, he'd slept, not waking until dawn light entered the airy dwelling that housed the hermit's healers. At present, he was the sole occupant, except for the dog, which had refused to leave his side and which now lay quiet alongside his pallet. He was glad the healers had allowed Shadow to stay. They had checked Mattis's shoulder, supplied him with a fresh sling, giving him, too, a draught to take. But Mattis had then left the healer's house. He had not returned here to sleep. Lucas hadn't seen Stasia since the old woman took her away. Perhaps she had slept in the crone's quarters, or with some women of the forest folk. Now that there were choices, she surely wouldn't be sharing quarters with Alexis and the others. He would have gone to find her. But the healer had given him instructions to stay where he was, at least until someone came to check on him this morning. He could hardly argue with that after all they had done for him. He wondered what was in that odd-looking draught. There were too many disturbing tales about what might happen if human folk ate or drank in the other world. There was to be a great gathering later in the day. The whole community. Before that happened, before Stasia could talk to Alexis again, he wanted to see her. He needed to find out how she was really feeling and what she wanted to do. Or was it too soon for that discussion? He might only upset her. They weren't going to let him go home until the settlement was safe, and who knew how long that would take. So he was stuck here for a good while. Each day of delay was another day of endurance for his parents, his sisters, his community. Another day of back-breaking labor, of constant fear. Who was looking after the goats? Were there any goats left? At least the commander was gone. Perhaps the others would be withdrawn. A man could only wish. Even so, there was a huge task ahead, putting things to rights, mending what was broken, rebuilding the community again, piece by piece. He needed to be there. His heart was racing now. The healers would not approve. He closed his eyes, imagining what Stasia might say. "Breathe slowly, Lucas. Make it a pattern." And she'd repeat some sort of rhyme or charm to calm him. "It's hard to be patient," she would say. "It's hard to take things slowly. Think of trees, how long they stand there, looking out over the world, watching as the years pass and humankind does all sorts of stupid things. As those years pass, their roots go deeper and deeper, and their branches stretch wider, and they make room for all sorts of creatures to live in them. They give us shade in summer. They give us their berries and nuts when they drop branches. They give us wood for building or fuel for our fires in winter. They gladden our hearts with their beauty and their mystery. Breathe like a tree." Lucas, his eyes snapped open. He'd been lying there in a daze. He sat up too quickly, wincing. "Careful," Stasia said, reaching out an arm to steady him. "Don't undo the healer's good work." "I'm fine. Much better." He heard how sharp that sounded and drew a couple of long breaths. "Sorry, you startled me. You came in so quietly. I thought you were asleep." Stasia sat down on the stool beside his bed. "I wanted to come and see you yesterday, but Mother Rowan, she's the wise woman here, had other things for me to do, including a bath and a sleep. I stayed in her home. It's in the caves within the hermit, and there really is amber here. The stories don't lie." He didn't want to think about amber, even though that was what had started all this. Was it possible, still, that Alexis was lying about all of it, and that he would carry the news of amber straight back to the ruler? He didn't want to believe it. It couldn't be so, could it? After finding his old friend and the joyful reunion, and the way they had fought the commander's men, risked their lives. Even poor Pavale had changed sides again in that terrible fight. He thought of Stasia with a bloody knife in her hands. Stasia, with the commander's blade against her neck. He never wanted her to be in such a position again. It was wrong, so wrong. "What?" she asked him, making him start. "What's troubling you? I thought you said you were fine. If something's wrong, tell me." "It's nothing. It's just, this feels odd, us here. Safe and the lost boy found and everything suddenly to rights when..." He faltered, unable to go on. The thing was too big to put into words. "When yesterday we were killing people, almost getting killed ourselves, not to talk of what happened at the Ridgeway. It's odd, all right. Hard to talk about. Hard to believe it's real. And we're not sitting down there on the edge of the forest watching over the goats. When I first woke in the morning with Flip tucked in next to me, for a moment I thought the whole thing had been some mad dream. Then I looked up and saw the cave roof and heard Mother Rowan poking the fire. Not a dream. It's our lives, Lucas. This is where we are right now." She paused, looking down at her hands. "Where we go next is another question. You know I'll go back home. These folk have said that they'll take me there when it's safe, though how long that'll be, I have no idea. Lucas, something was coming, something he didn't want to hear. He stayed quiet, waited. She, Mother Rowan, she said I could stay here if I wanted to. She said she'd teach me to use my gift wisely. I think she meant I would live here and work for her for a long time and maybe take over her work when she's too old to manage it. They call her the Forest Guardian. She watches over Heartwood and teaches folk to treat it with love and respect. She tells stories. Stasia was gazing at him, her eyes so bright it made him want to weep. Stupid fool of a man. Of course she loved that idea. Wasn't that exactly what she tried to do every single day of her life? It was only wretched Alexis who had led her on this path of fear and blood. This was a good thing, a wonderful thing. Best for her, of course. You would really do that. Say goodbye to the human world, to your own kind. Tarsia smiled. Mother Rowan is my own kind. Born to a human family, but raised by the forest folk, and rich in wisdom. Not all of the folk who live here are of that other race, and not all of them stay within this realm all the time. There are some links with the outside world. Those are necessary, but this place is protected. What to say? This was perfect for her. It was what she wanted. And she was his dearest friend, the companion of his childhood, the one who could tell a story just for him, turning his mood from dark to light with the magic of her words. She was herself, whole and true. How could he suggest anything else? He thought of her little cottage on the edge of the forest with its welcome hearth and its well-tended garden. He imagined it empty, desolate, the door half off its hinges and banging loose in a chill wind. He thought maybe his heart was breaking. What else could cause such terrible pain? You'll wed a fine girl, Lucas. Stasia spoke so softly, he could hardly hear the words. There's someone waiting for you. I'm sure of it. You'll make a wonderful husband, great father, a leader loved by your whole community. It's the truth. She released his hand and rose to her feet. I'd better go. I'll see you later at the gathering. Surely they'll let you out for that. And she was gone. 49. Alexis. He rose early and went out walking, leaving the others either fast asleep or making a convincing pretense of it. Too early to look for Stasia, but he would not lie abed wakeful while his mind teemed with unanswerable questions. Were they doing the right thing by taking Marcus back as soon as he felt ready to go? Should they leave him here safe until they'd done more preparation out in the community? Perhaps until they had garnered more support among the powerful. More pressing, even, than those weighty matters was the issue of Stasia. What right had he to disrupt her life still further by asking her to come with him, to continue risking life and limb, and perhaps her sanity, by walking his pathway and not her own? She'd almost been killed, more than once. That was his fault. Yes, he'd rescued her and Lucas from a terrible fate at Dragon's Keep, but they'd only been there because of his decision to load them on a cart and take them out of Heartwood. A small, contrary part of his mind pointed out that both Lucas and Stasia had attracted Rehard's attention at the settlement, not in a good way, and that back then, removing them had been the only way to protect them. But, surely, there had been some other alternative. What he'd done to Stasia had been wrong. He remembered her calming the frenzied horse. He thought of her curled up with the little dog sleeping beside her. He imagined her telling a story of courage and friendship and hope. As he walked under spreading beech trees, He pictured her by his side, perhaps finding treasures he would have missed. A stone with a hole in it, a feather of many colours, a tiny, perfect flower, half hidden in the undergrowth. That woman had no place in a game of strategy, with the leadership of the Northlands at stake and players who would stop at nothing to win. He did not walk far. He'd seen for himself how distances seemed to change of themselves in this realm, and he had no wish to embarrass himself by getting lost on his first morning here. He'd go back, see if the others were awake yet, have a word with them. But he had to talk to Stasia. Soon before this gathering at which Marcus would speak to the forest folk about the situation, he wanted to talk to her. He could tell her about Carolus's idea and how there would be work for her if they went ahead with it. But what if she said no? She quite reasonably might. What if she said yes, and later came to grief as a result? One thing was certain. He did not want to say goodbye. He lingered on the way back, watching a bird of some kind as it flew from branch to branch above him in what looked like a mysterious dance, hunting insects, seeking a more comfortable perch, checking out the territory before announcing to its friends that all was safe except for one wandering human who didn't seem to know where he was going. Stasia would know what that fluttering dance meant. A remarkable skill, one that sometimes made her life difficult and sometimes helped her keep out of trouble. She had been devastated by that wolf's death. He'd ached to put his arms around her in comfort, but that had been neither the time nor the place. "There is no time or place, you fool," he told himself. "Alex?" And there she was, coming down the path as if she'd been looking for him. The loose-fitting garments of the forest folk suited her. She looked like a part of the forest, leaf green, earth brown. "Stasia, you're up and out early. I wanted to talk to you. And I wanted to talk to you before this gathering, not back at the settlement, somewhere private." Some rocks nearby provided a comfortable enough seat. "Did you sleep well?" he asked. "Like a log. Perhaps because of a draught Mother Rowan gave me. Perhaps only because I know we're safe at last. How did you sleep, Alex?" He opened his mouth to say, "Fine," but closed it with the word "unspoken." "Time to tell the truth, Alex. About everything." "Not well, despite the comfortable bed and the kind hospitality. My mind is too full. There's too much ahead. It's another mountain to climb. Not a physical journey, but an equally taxing one. And despite Marcus being willing to accept the challenge, despite all the planning, I don't feel ready for it." "You'll be ready," Stasia said, her tone quietly confident. "You have good friends, good allies. You know how to lead, how to plan. If it weren't for that, we wouldn't be here. You found Marcus. A real achievement. There's been sorrow. There have been losses. But you must have known there would be. This was never going to be easy. But you've done it so far. And you can do what lies ahead too. Why doubt yourself now? May I ask you something?" Her smile was a little crooked. She looked amused. "Go ahead. I may not answer, of course. You know Lucas can't go back to the settlement until it's safe, until the ruler's men are withdrawn from there. That might take a long while. It may have to wait until we establish Marcus as ruler. I'm assuming you'll want to go back with your friend." Stasia was looking out into the forest. For a few moments he wondered if she had not heard him. Then she said, "I've just seen Lucas. I've told him I'm not going back to Hartwood. There's nothing for me there. I was never really part of that community, and if I went back now, it would be even worse. Accusations of witchcraft because of what's happened. People have always thought me odd. I never had plans to become a village wife. I'm not right for that life. Lucas will be happy in time. He'll be a husband and father and a leader in the settlement. I told him that. Delight filled Alexis's heart. He struggled to conceal it, knowing how easily Stasia could read his moods. Are you sure? He made himself ask. Mother Rowan and I looked in the water together. We performed a ritual. I saw it. Lucas in the settlement, busy and content, and not with me. He is a dear friend. We've been close since we were children. But we wouldn't be happy as husband and wife. I've known that for a long time. And I thought Lucas knew it too. But it seems not. I upset him. Alexis told himself to move slowly, not to leap in with suggestions about what else she might do with her life, at least not all at once, but he did need to say it. There's more, Stasia said before he could speak. What I saw in the water, there were different possibilities, though those visions don't actually show the future, only what might happen. I saw myself and Mother Rowan, both much older, working together. She told me afterwards that I can stay here if I want. Stay and learn. In time become a wise woman like her. And eventually I might take over her work of guiding both uncanny folk and human folk in understanding the ways of the forest. What we can learn from it. How we can best care for the land and the trees and the creatures. Alex, if Marcus becomes ruler, he will surely forbid the thoughtless felling of trees, the search for amber, as if it were just another thing to be ripped out and sold for profit. Since he was brought up here among the forest folk, he must understand that. He does, Alex said. His heart had turned to lead. He felt sick. For a few moments he had been full of hope. And now, living at the Hermit, becoming a wise woman, that seems entirely right for you. You must be happy. As if the journey, with all its ills, was worthwhile. Stasia took her time to reply. In the vision, in the possibilities, this was the only one where I saw myself, my future self, complete with grey hair. Alex thought she was going to say more, but she fell silent. Into the quiet came the songs of birds, and in the distance, faint sounds of folk starting to go about their daily business. His companions would be stirring. He should go back. What he wanted to say, he could not say. This was good for Stasia. It was surely the sort of life she had longed for, and at least he would know she was safe. Right now, that was little comfort. I should go. His voice sounded strange, almost choked, and Stasia turned a searching gaze on him. He was on his feet and walking away when something stopped him, and he said without turning, Talk to Carolus before the gathering, if you can. Ask him about his plan for spreading the word out in the community. If she answered, he did not hear. Perhaps she only whispered a reply. Perhaps the voices of the birds swallowed her words. He could only hope. 50. Stasia. They were in an open grassy space, shaped like a shallow bowl. It seemed the entire community of forest folk had gathered to meet the travellers, to greet them with some formality, and to share a meal afterwards. A crowd. She'd never been comfortable in crowds, though this, at least, was a quiet, orderly one, and those who were setting out food and drink, or greeting friends, or helping others find a spot to sit, were doing so without any fuss. Flip had taken bird form and was up in the trees somewhere. Right now, Stasia would have liked the little dog by her side to remind her that she could be strong even with so many folk around. Failing that, she would use her breathing and the reassuring presence of Mother Rowan to keep her calm. That awkward conversation with Alex had hardly helped. Just as well she'd spoken to Mattis and Carolus afterwards, while Alex conferred with Marcus in private. that had helped her make sense of things. "I, too, will hold the light," she told herself. "I, too, will be strong." Nobody was leaving right now, or even soon. There was time for thinking, for planning. There was time for all of them to make up their minds, or to change their minds. She was seated beside Mother Rowan. That placed her more prominently than she really liked, since the wise woman's age meant she was provided with a low bench, and she'd invited Stasia to share it. Everyone else sat on the grass or perched on the mossy stones that dotted the clearing. Lucas was there with Shadow by his side. He looked as if he was trying to be invisible, not easy for a man of his height, especially one with such a head of curls. Dear Lucas. She'd hurt him badly. But once he'd really thought about it, surely he'd realized she couldn't go back. The settlement had been home for a long while, but it would never be again. A few latecomers settled into the crowd, and suddenly the place was full of anticipation. Not a hush, exactly, for it was always quiet here. Kadri stepped forward, a fresh circlet of flowers on her head, and addressed the assembled folk. "Greetings, all, and welcome," Kadri said. "In particular, we welcome our visitors from the world beyond our border and congratulate them on a grueling quest bravely achieved. We greet them with both joy and sorrow, since their coming means we will be bidding farewell to a beloved member of our own community." She inclined her head, smiling toward Marcus. "Our son, our boy, now become a man, and with a destiny before him. Marcus, will you speak to our people?" He rose to his feet and moved forward. A fine-looking man, a strong man, a man whom others would follow. In an old tale, he would be the handsome prince, the leader of men, the hero who saved the day. But he had his own story, and that was of a lost boy found and found again. "My people," Marcus said, "my family. I owe you my life, my sanity, my health. You will always be dear to my heart. I could go on all day, but I'll spare you that, friends." He gave a rueful smile. A soft ripple of laughter passed through his audience. "In time, I will be leaving you. I need not explain why, for by now everyone must know. Whatever comes of my journey back to the place of my birth, I make you a solemn promise. Whether or not I am elevated to leadership of the Northlands, I swear to live by the values you taught me as I grew up, as well as those I learned early from my father. I will do everything in my power to protect this realm, as well as the human lands I may be entrusted to rule. I will honor the forest and all it holds. I will never allow it to be exploited for gain." Murmurs of approval from the crowd, the whisper of the trees, the songs of the birds, the movements of creatures large and small came to Stasia as an echo of that feeling. All were content. This was a true son of both realms, a treasure indeed. "Although I will be leaving you for now, I will not leave you forever. I pledge that as ruler of the Northlands, once a year I will come back to visit you. You know well the ways that can be done without attracting undue attention, and Master Alexis and his comrades are expert at handling such matters in their own world." His gaze moved to the three men, sitting at the front of the crowd. He glanced across to Stasia, giving a little nod. They faced challenges on their way here. They endured loss, sorrow, hurt. It is never easy for outsiders to make their way to the Hermit. Some obstacles, I know, exist for precisely that purpose, to keep human folk out. Some owe their presence to darker elements of this realm. Some, this time, came from those who followed Master Alexis's team with ill intent. Marcus looked direct at Mother Rowan, and some were designed as tests to determine the courage, the fortitude, the worthiness of the man who never gave up his dream of finding me. Tests also to prove the qualities of his chosen companions. It was known they were coming. It was known what they sought. I am sorry for the ill you suffered on this journey, my friends. His voice was suddenly uneven, as if tears were close. A brave leader, a stalwart team, our deep thanks to you. He cleared his throat. And now I think it is time for a story. After that, we will eat and drink. We will sing and dance. We will celebrate what has been achieved and what is to come. Mother Rowan, will you tell a tale? The wise woman did not get up, though her smile as she looked at Marcus was that of a proud parent who sees in her child all that she has hoped he might one day be. Stasia, perhaps you should tell a story, she said, putting a gentle hand on Stasia's shoulder. Will you do that for us? For just a moment, the old fears came back. Who did she think she was, standing up to speak in front of such a crowd? Had she forgotten how much she hated to have everyone's eyes on her, expectant? But she had to do it. What Carolus and Mattis had told her had changed everything. She rose to her feet. Lucas was watching her from a distance. He gave her a smile that said, "You can do it." Alex was watching her. He acknowledged her with a grave nod. Time to step forward. "I can be brave. I am the storyteller." This was a kind of test. Whatever she decided to do in the future, she would keep on telling tales. That was part of her very existence. She stood before her audience, taking time to breathe. Flip flew down, alighting on her shoulder to appreciative murmuring from the crowd. A dove, messenger of peace. The words came. On the way here, around one campfire or another, we told a lot of stories. Old ones, new ones, funny ones, sad ones. Now and then I told the tale of our own journey, in one form or another. Perhaps now, my companions of that journey might help me with the telling. She told the beginning, but gave the odd group of travellers new names. The leader, the protector, the acrobat, and, for poor Pavale, the quiet one. She was the storyteller, Lucas the farmer. Flip she called the small companion. The leader was seeking a lost friend. The others were his comrades. The story flowed well, and there was no need to ask for help until the characters had reached their destination after a grueling journey during which they lost the quiet one, whom they would always remember, and came close to losing more. She told how his steadiness and care for others made the protector beloved of all. She told how the acrobat was strong in both body and spirit, generous with his knowledge and as apt with healing as he was with wielding a weapon. The quiet one's story was sad. In time, his friends would make sure his family learned how he had stood up for the good cause in the end. He would never be forgotten. The farmer was a brave man who'd been drawn into the adventure despite himself. Along the way, all had come to admire his strength and courage. At last, they had reached their destination, and there was the lost boy, now a fine man, well equipped to take his true place as ruler of the realm. With only a few words, the heir made it plain he would rule with justice and forbearance. He would guard the forest and its creatures as carefully as he would the human folk of his territory. He knew and understood the uncanny folk whose secret realm bordered his own, for it was they who had raised him in tolerance and understanding of all things. He would be a ruler for the powerful and the wealthy, for there was no escaping that. But he would also be a ruler for the folk who farmed the land and the folk who baked the bread. An image of Irina flashed through her mind, bringing sudden tears to her eyes. She blinked them back. But how could the leader and his companions get the heir safely to the court? How could they ensure he was treated with justice and fairness when he declared himself? Some would resent this claim and try to prove it wrong. They might seek to do the heir or his followers harm. The leader pondered this. It kept him awake at night. His mind was burdened with dark possibilities, despite the careful work his team had done in advance to smooth the way. He wondered how they could get the word out to the people without putting the heir at risk. She glanced over at Carolus with a smile. "The acrobat came up with a daring plan," Carolus said, rising to his feet. His stance suggested he was preparing to fight, or perhaps to dance, perfectly poised with the light touching his auburn hair to flame. He and the storyteller would join up with a team of travelling entertainers, musicians, dancers, folk of many talents, as they moved around the Northlands from settlement to settlement. They would not tell the heir's story openly, that was far too risky, but they would tell tales of a peaceful realm where all folk were treated justly, and the natural world was honoured, and disputes were settled not by blood and violence, but by discussion, negotiation, regular meetings with the smallest village to the largest township, a place where leaders were not distant, but present to hear the voices of their people with respect and to take action when it was needed. Those tales would not be dreary pronouncements of how things should be. They would be full of delight and fun. A gasp from the crowd as Carolus performed a backflip, landing on his feet with a grin on his face. Fortunately, there were two among the leader's small group of comrades who were perfect for this job. Carolus nodded to Mattis, and the two changed places. Alex was speaking to someone sitting behind him. She wished she could see his expression. He knew about this general idea. Carolus had put it to him some while back, but likely not in such terms. "Now you might think," Mattis said, his voice deep and soft, "that with so few in the leader's team, this might be a risky choice. The farmer would be going home. This was not his quest, and he had pressing matters to attend to. That left the leader with three companions. If two joined the travelling players, he would be left with only one. Just as well, that one was the protector." He looked at Stasia, smiling. "I like that name well," he said. "But of course, those who came on the journey were not the leader's only supporters. They were scattered across the Northlands, from within the ruler's court itself to the far borders, from isolated farms to fishing villages to every corner of the land. Men and women who, as well as their ordinary lives, handled the secret business of preparation for the heir's arrival. Yes, even though the leader and his companions had journeyed without knowing if the man they sought was alive or dead, the support for their cause was gradually growing. Through the travelling players, more folk would be awakened to the possibility of change. They would learn that the realm could be a better place." Mattis paused, taking time to look around his audience. His expression now was utterly serious. It was fortunate, indeed, then, that within his team the leader happened to have not only an acrobat who could sing, dance, and play tricks, but also a skilled storyteller. Time for Stasia to speak again and bring this to a conclusion. While those two were out working their magic among the ordinary people, the heir would live in a safe place, well guarded, and study those things he would need to know to take up his new rule. The leader and his protector would move with subtlety and caution among the powerful, the wealthy, the folk with influence, the folk who might be valuable allies or dangerous enemies. They would journey beyond the borders of the Northlands and talk to people in the neighbouring lands. Only when all was prepared would the team gather once more and bring the heir home. She looked out at the assembled forest folk, all of whom were silent, their full attention on her. Mother Rowan's expression spoke for her. "Well done, my dear." The heir would always have two homes, the one where he was born and lived as a child, and where his destiny lay, and this one among the forest folk, the home where he was raised to be a fine man, fit to lead with justice and compassion. Stasia looked directly at Marcus. "I know he will honour both in his future life." Gods, she was actually finished. She'd got through it. "And that's all from me," she said, as Flip arose from her shoulder and flew in a circle over the crowd as if in recognition of a deed well done. Folk rose then and moved about, while some began to set out food and drink. There was a low buzz of conversation. For a little, Stasia lost sight of the others. Suddenly, she did not want to be here, with so many people milling about. She made her way through the crowd until she found a spot under a tree whose name she did not know, something small and compact with a friendly look to it. She sat down with her arms around her knees and bowed her head. For a moment, just a moment, she longed for her little house on the edge of the forest and the old days with Flip and Lucas. Things had been so much simpler then, but she'd never have met Alex or Mattis or Carolus. She'd never have come to the Hermit and met the forest folk. She'd never have encountered Mother Rowan, who had opened a magical door on the future. How could she even think of wishing that away? It was her life now, and although it was often confusing and sometimes terrifying, she wanted it with all her heart. "Stasia?" There he was, looking down at her. His sharp features were softened by a smile such as she had never seen on his face before. "Thank you," he said. Stasia patted the ground beside her in invitation, and Alex lowered himself to sit. "You really want to come with us?" he said, "after being offered an opportunity to stay here? When our work is done, when Marcus is established as ruler, I'll come back here. The forest folk will make sure I reach the Hermit safely." "You set that up, the three of you? When?" "Not long ago, while you were talking to Marcus. The others had a few honest words with me. They may have explained a little about why you seemed so reluctant for me to stay with you. I was wrong, and I'm sorry." He took her hand in his. "It troubles me to see you hurt. I will worry about you every moment you're gone with these travelling players, even though you'll be with Carolus. And if anyone can protect you, he can. You are one of us, Stasia, an essential member of the team. I insulted you by treating you as anything less." Finding the right words was easy now. "And I'm sorry for using your story that way when it's so personal. But it was the only way to make you understand." "A striking demonstration of your storytelling skills." His smile was crooked now. He lifted her hand to his lips, just for an instant, and Stasia felt the touch right through her body. Then he released his hold with a sigh. "A long road ahead," he said, "with its own kind of trouble. Sometimes I think it's better for folk who take on such tasks to be quite alone, sufficient unto themselves. I've always wondered how Mattis and his wife do it, both of them working for our cause, hardly ever seeing each other." There's a bond, I suppose. Strong enough to survive even a long parting. And perhaps the end of this trouble is in sight. You found the lost boy. You rekindled hope, Alex. In the silence that followed, what lay unspoken between them seemed vast and terrifying and wonderful all at the same time. One day, Stasia thought, one day, maybe, I'll tell him what I feel. Maybe one day I'll understand it. Maybe I'll tell him straight out, not in a story, if I'm brave enough. We should go back, she said, looking over to the clearing where folk were eating and drinking, and there was music, a harp, a whistle, a little drum. Was that Carolus dancing with a woman of the forest folk? I suppose we should. Alex got to his feet, reached out a hand to help her up. Quickly, before she could change her mind, Stasia touched her lips to his cheek and made him smile again. One day, she thought, we too will dance. The end. Acknowledgements. I'm immensely grateful to my publisher, Dylan Ingram, for believing in my project of the heart and for supporting the venture all the way from the spark of an idea to publication. It's been great to work with the New Dawn team. Thanks to my editor, Eleanor Neri, for a thorough and expert job and for her tactful feedback. Copy editor Chelsea Wilcox was understanding about my rather entrenched position on punctuation. Those inverted commas are a story in themselves. The gorgeous cover for The Amber Owl was created by the very talented Michaela Alcano. A huge thank you to Michaela. This cover truly captures the spirit of the story. Deep thanks also to Virginia Allen, whose delicate map of the Northlands is a wonderful addition to the novel. Fiona Leonard, writer and one-time critique partner, provided challenging but immensely useful editorial advice along the way. Thoreya Dyer, writer and veterinarian, gave me expert guidance on stressed-out horses. Last but not least, I send love and thanks to the Rainbow Bridge, where a little dog called Pip is waiting, probably not very patiently, for me. She does have plenty of company up there. Pip was a big personality in the tiny body of a miniature pincher. She was the inspiration for a certain character in this story. Author's note. The setting of The Amber Owl is imaginary. However, the world of the books is very loosely based on the Baltic region, where amber can be found. The character names are from that region, with some flexibility applied, since this is a work of fiction. I am grateful for the inspiration sparked by a visit to the Baltic states a few years ago, where the joyful singing and dancing, along with the lovely landscape, made an indelible impression on me. The events of this story have nothing to do with real history, except, possibly, the activities of the warrior monks. Belinda hopes you enjoyed the reading of The Amber Owl, Heartwood, Book 1, written by Juliette Marillier and read by Emma Drysdale. If you want to hear more about our award-winning range of audiobook titles, please visit us online at shop.belinda.com or be inspired by our story at belinda.com. Thanks for listening, and always take a Belinda audiobook with you. Text copyright Juliette Marillier, 2025. Recording copyright Belinda Publishing, 2025.